no matter what job you do, a lot of the complex projects and programs and initiatives do revolve around human change. You always have to think about the people. Even if it looks like an operational change, a systems change, a financial change, if you don't focus on how that impacts the people part of whatever change you're making, then the effect will be seriously diminished or non-existent. And thinking about how to get through to a person and get them through successfully and excitedly, that's a lot of what we do in enablement. And it's a lot of what everybody should be thinking about.
I think it's terribly important to insist on individual values.
Learning Culture Podcast.
Initiative, creation, all these things which we value. It's now possible to make organizations on a larger scale than was ever possible before.
Learning Culture Podcast.
Teach people to analyze the kind of things that are said to them.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Learning Culture Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Barry. This is a show about the cultures of continuous learning. And joining me today is Cheryl Buschek. Cheryl is the Director of Enablement Programs at Juniper Networks. She's responsible for all their onboarding, and it's a new role that she has recently taken on. In this conversation, we reflect on all the previous roles that Cheryl has had in her career and the lessons that she's taking to this new role at Juniper Networks. So the topic is the human side, or the human challenges of changing your go-to-market strategy. A very real, very relevant problem for many of you listening, I'm sure. And in this conversation, we explore the challenges around people's ability to adapt to change, right? Change is inevitable, change is coming, and change often starts at the top. So that's where our sort of solution starts as well, and looking at the role that leadership plays in change, the transparency that needs to be there. You're also going to learn about how it's an opportunity to bring people along with you. And if everyone took that attitude, change would be a lot easier. We talk about the role of company vision and what a shared vision looks like. We talk about how making it about your customers helps navigate change. We talk about how important recognition is, how important it is to over-communicate, how important it is to give people permission to fail. We talk about providing access to resources so people know where to go if they are uncertain of what to do next. We also talk about safety and trust and modeling the behavior you want to see and having an openness to feedback. For those longtime listeners of the show, these are all things I talk about when I talk about learning culture. So it was really interesting for me to unpack this with Cheryl and hear her perspective from a change management professional, as she has realized her role increasingly is every single job she's had in this space, and the stuff that I talk about around learning culture. So I know that's why it's what I've been talking about resonates with everyone who listens to the show. And I know that the many of you that are listeners that I've met, I resonate with what you're talking about, because we're all essentially talking about the same thing. So if you are enthusiastic about helping people navigate change, I think you're going to get a lot of practical tips out of this episode with Cheryl. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy my episode with Cheryl Buschek. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
I am great. Thank you. It's good to be here with you. I feel like I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. Yeah, you and I, we've had many conversations leading up to this. For those listening, we even had an aborted attempt to record this conversation, and many things conspired against us, all technologically related. So it's good to be here. And you know, you're in the office at your new role. I want to start there. How are you finding things at Juniper Networks?
I love Juniper Networks so far. I'm still adjusting and adapting and learning, of course. It's going to take me a little while to understand everything, but it was really exciting. We had our first live new hire event in like 3 years, a few weeks ago. And it was really fun to be the host of that event and MC it. And I have a phenomenal team. Very awesome. Happy and grateful to be here. It's an excellent enablement team and program, and we have leadership that values enablement, and you know, that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah,
Yeah, and so you are responsible for onboarding programs there at Juniper. The topic that you and I settle on for this conversation is the human side, the human challenges of changing your go-to-market strategy. Now, we're going to get into, I think, a really cool tactical episode around some of the challenges and problems, sort of flesh those out and then talk about your take and experience on solutions here. But before, to kind of set the scene, why is this a topic that gets you fired up? Why does it make come alive for you?
So it's related to all the experience I've had before this time, I guess is the easiest way to put it. I've been doing enablement for a long time, and I pretty much owned everything in my last few jobs. It wasn't just onboarding. It was how do we enable people and all of the human factors of not just onboarding, but everboarding and optimal performance and all of that. And in my last couple of roles, there was a lot of change happening. And I had people that were specifically assigned to how do we work on change management in general, whether it's a pricing change or releasing a new version of a product. In one company, we transformed the whole business over the course of a few years from kind of a traditional perpetual licensing and a hardware sale into all subscription and SaaS. So that was a huge transition. But even to the point where you have a new product that you add on to what you're already selling, and you need to bring people along and have them start selling something new, maybe to a new target audience, maybe into a new market, that is a pretty big change for a sales force that's made a lot of money doing what they've always done. So there are a couple of different circumstances that I have myself dealt with in my last few companies that have required a lot of holistic thought around how do help people through this and help make them successful so that the company can be successful. Because part of that was the success of the company is dependent on people expanding what they're doing now, people changing what they're doing now. And change is hard.
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah, 100%. Change is constant. Change is hard. I think that it will resonate true for everyone. It's a cliche for a reason, right? Because it's so true. And so you've lived through it at all the previous companies you've worked at, and no doubt will happen at Juniper Networks at some point. So what are, like, let's go back to, you mentioned that, like, you know, people, I always try to put put myself in the shoes of the learner here, you know, sort of the end consumer of what we do in this world. And you mentioned how, like, they suddenly now the rules of the game have changed, right? They were successful, many of them, at the thing that they had to do before that, and now suddenly it's all changed. The company's going to take a different approach, go, you know, a different angle. And, you know, so that's like annoying, right? That's frustrating. That's sort of, there's a lot of different emotions. Can you talk to that side of it a little bit? Like, what is the reaction been like? Let's ground ourselves a little bit in what it's actually like for those people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a person myself, so I understand the notion of, you know what's happening, you know what you're doing, you're feeling really comfortable and confident in what you're doing every day. And now somebody from up top says, well, wait, we have to, you know, we all know we have to skate to where the puck is going. We have our leaders to look forward, but it's uncomfortable when you've known what you're doing for years and years. You've been successful, you've been high performance. And when you make changes, your confidence and your competence naturally are going to wane a bit because you're being asked to do new things that you're not used to, you're not accustomed to. And it's not that you can't get there, but if you've been successful for a long time in the role that you have, and then the company is changing direction and they're asking you to change with it, yeah, it's a period of discomfort, but that's the opportunity to bring people with you. It's for the, we all understand, well, we help people understand this is so the company can thrive and you can continue to prosper as you have before, along with the entire company. The why is very important in helping people see the future picture. Here's how you're going to be successful in the new world, and we're going to help you get there. We value you. You are a high performer, and we are going to give you every tool and training that you need to continue being successful as we embark on this change together. Like, we're not just throwing something to you. We're going to help you go. We're going to take your hand and we're going to shepherd you through, and we're going to make sure you can continue being successful. That's our dedication to you as a person.
So let's talk about that a little bit. I'm going to probably jump between like the problem statement and the solution and as we get more and more of them, but this one is near and dear to my heart, because what you're describing, you know, the why, the purpose, it's really the vision of the company. And I'd love to know your take on this. You've been involved in a lot of onboarding programs. How well do you feel companies have integrated their vision into the onboarding that a typical rep goes through?
The interesting thing is, I think onboarding is the easiest part of any change, because when somebody new enters a company, they're already making a big change and joining a new place, and they're coming in expecting to need to learn new things. So the easiest time to help people change what they're used to doing is when they're already coming into a new company in a new circumstance. Mm. That to me is the easy part. Wherever we want people to be and how we want them to sell and what we want them to talk about and converse with, and the new methodology, if you're rolling out a methodology, that's much easier to teach on day one, week one, month one, than somebody that's been in seat for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Easier.
Yeah. 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 So, the vision part of the company, like, how well do companies communicate their vision in a way that gets commitment from people and not just compliance?
It depends on the leadership. I have been fortunate, though, to be part of a whole bunch of companies where leadership is really good at that, honestly, and thoughtful about the changes that they want to make, and can create the picture of why are we doing this? This is all about our customers, and it's about ensuring that all of us as a unit continue to soar. I have seen CEOs, CFOs, and CROs and others that are very good at painting that picture at a high level in front of a big audience, like at a kickoff or at an all-hands meeting. So I think that is something I've seen people be very good at. I think where it gets lost is, okay, great, we're all in, we're drinking the Kool-Aid, you know, we have all the rah-rah stuff going on stage. But then helping make that really tangible for people. So what does that mean for you? What do you need to do differently? There's a lot of talk at the top, but people actually changing their behaviors is a whole different story.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's keep going on this, because this is, I think, so important, as you correctly said, I think at the beginning, getting the why communicated in a way that gets commitment to it is sort of the domino that gets all the other dominoes going. So I agree totally. Leadership is that first and most important, the ability for the leader to communicate and live, you know, the vision and the values of that company is the starting point. And that some leaders are not capable of doing. And it's very much like top-down directive, and that, you know, that doesn't work. So that's great. And then you said this, I think, very interesting part, this is where I think enablement can come in a lot more, is helping to make it real for the people on the ground, for the people in the field, right? What does it mean to you each individually? So let's explore that a little bit more. What have you seen work in approaching that very real problem?
I think when you're making big changes, what works is you start from the why and get people excited, but then you have to click down and say, so what's in it for you? And I'm going to paint the picture at a very tangible level for each individual part of the organization and each individual role, like each person in a more in a more relevant and specific way. So what I've seen work really well when you're planning big changes, you gather up the holistic go-to-market group. I mean, you've got product, you've got sales, you've got marketing, and then you have engineering, you have HR. So you gather up the whole org and say, all right, so we're making this big change. Let's break this down into change components and how we're going to execute the change and how we are going to think through bringing people through each part of this execution. So breaking it down into, for each organization, once we're done with this change, what will it look like and feel like? And having the picture of how will we know when we're done with this change? Mm. How will we know we have brought people through successfully and operationalized it throughout our organization? What will that look like if I'm in IT or engineering or sales or marketing or the product management team? You kind of consider each group and say, what will it look like when we're there? Like, what will people be thinking? What will people be doing? What will this look like to the outside world? And having a clear view of what will it look like when you're done, and then being able to say, well, where are we today? And where do we want to be tomorrow or in 3 years, as the case may be? And what are the steps that we need to take to get to where we want to be from where we are? But just having that clear view of what it looks like on the other end, and then breaking that down into manageable steps, and not thinking you're going to get through all of it in a month, because that can never happen. There's kind of that human change curve where, what I like thinking about it as, what is there? Storming, norming, and performing. So we're going to go through some bumps. We're going to plan it out. We're going to say, we're going to bring people with us. What does this person have to do differently? How does this change affect this person? And what do we have to help them know or do differently? So when you consider it, you break it down by org and by role, and you help people understand what you need them to do. And then you equip them to do that successfully and help them feel successful rapidly, and then gain confidence and competence and continue to highly perform. But the key is to know what it looks like at the end for each role, and then break it down into what is it going to take to get there. So there's the human side and the operations side, and you have to cover both.
Yeah. And who, that vision of what the future looks like for each of those roles, who is creating that? What does that process look like?
It depends on the change. We didn't have kind of a dedicated change management group or an outside consultant. We didn't hire an outside consultant to help us with this. We did gather up a core team. So we had a steering committee that had some leaders from key organizations. And then we had a core team underneath that we knew we were going to need to help with operationalizing the change. And we had like 28 different work streams that were led by different members of the core team. We had a tracking system. We had a formal program manager that was tracking all of the pieces, green, yellow, red, what's the timing. So we made it into a formal cross-organizational program that we knew was going to last a while. And then we phased it and we said, okay, phase one, we're going to get from here to here. Phase two, we're going to get from here to here. And phase three, we're going to get from here to here. So we chunked it out. We had the right core team. We fleshed out what all those work streams were. And then we went and we kept measuring, inquiring, surveying, seeing if it was having impact for the people that we were focused on. And by carefully tracking and managing and making sure a whole bunch of pieces of the org were in the boat together, that's how we did it. We worked it together. And if we hit a bump or we had to make an adjustment, we said, okay, wait, stop. Let's think about this. How does this impact everything? We're seeing this. We didn't expect to see that. And then we changed a little bit. So we were measuring and kind of changing course a little bit, but always with the end point in mind. We had the end point. It was a little bit of a winding road to get there, not a straight line. But we knew that because we all knew going in that we didn't know what we didn't know. It's the first time the company had made this type of massive change. We were going to get started and just kind of checkpoint along the way. And if something wasn't working, we just kind of changed course a little bit. So we got back on track. And people didn't expect it to be perfect at the outset. Everybody knew it wasn't going to be, but we could see ourselves making progress. And, and the phases made a difference too, because then it gave us checkpoints where we said, okay, overall, are we where we expected we would be at the end of phase one in each of these areas, in each of these work streams?
Yeah. And that stage gating of the process is so key. You also used the word we throughout there, which makes me realize that, I mean, it's the vision we're talking about here is a shared vision, which in my research and work, that is really the only vision that matters. It's a shared vision. There's no point in having a top-down vision because it only begs for compliance. It doesn't ever elicit commitment. So that was really cool to hear the way you said that, and it was very much we, and it was represented across all parts of the go-to-market. So that brings me to the next challenge, which you and I talked on our aborted episode. It was one of the first ones we brought up, and that was this alignment between marketing and product and sales. And there's a big challenge here, especially when the messaging has changed or the process or the product or anything like that, that alignment gets out of sync. Now, obviously, you just said that there was this task force, there was a group, you know, that's come together and it's representative across all of those. But how do you get that? And maybe you want to just sort of elaborate on the challenge a bit more, but that has to get cascaded down to everybody in each of those functions. And that's difficult, right?
It is. Communication is a big piece of it too. And having people that effectively communicate in different ways across different channels to different people, in ways that are relevant, motivating, cheering on the people that are doing the right things. Recognition is a part of this too. We made it a point to recognize people along the way. We had a kind of peer recognition system, and we recognized people that were being successful in taking the steps they needed to executing this change. So we did make it a point to call out people that were doing really, really well during things like all hands meetings. And there were some opportunities for kind of bonus points and all that as well.
Yeah. So recognition is so, so important. I'm glad you called that out specifically as well. We talk about this a lot, and you mentioned it, and celebrating successes and making it goes back to that confidence, right? And making people feel like, you know, that here's the vision where we headed. We've got a very difficult and windy path there, but hey, that thing that you did was really, really good, and you know, let's celebrate that. Let's take the strength that we can from that, keep moving forward. Anything else that has also kind of worked in that? Because I mean, I love that this is, we're calling this the human challenges of this, right? This really is a human problem. It's a human concern. It's like the hardest thing in the world is for humans to change and to navigate change. So yeah, what else have you seen? I want to really kind of pick your experience here that's worked to kind of bring people along with you, as you said.
I think communication is incredibly important, and not just the rah-rah speeches. It's helping people understand that we have a learning culture. Like, I know this is big with you, and I completely agree with it. Organizations with learning cultures give people permission to fall down. And that's not just communication. It's communication, but also reinforcement of what you're communicating. We can say, you know, we know as we make this change, we're going to make some mistakes along the way. And that is okay. We're going somewhere new. We're doing new things. It is okay to make a mistake. We're going to be here to help you pick back up. Sometimes we, as the core team, as the leadership team, might make a mistake. And then we're going to say, oh, whoops, that was a mistake. Let's get back on track. But that is part communication, but part management moving in the right direction and not punishing people when they do make mistakes. Giving people permission to innovate, but fail along the way is super important. That's yeah. as much company culture as anything else. So sometimes the company culture has to change a little bit in order to execute a change.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you called that out, because that is a key part of the things that we measure when we work with clients around learning culture. And it's actually making me realize, like, almost all the things you've said are part of this, our diagnostic for this. So you've got the leadership piece that's so important. You mentioned of how this, the leader has to set the tone for everything. We talked about vision. You mentioned also it's all about customers, and making it all about customers, also a massive part of this. Recognition, permission to fail and learn from those mistakes. And I also go back to communication, because I think the part there is just, well, I've learned this especially as well, like in dealing with clients, is it's communicate more than you think that's necessary. Over communicate.
Yeah. Yeah. Being very transparent. There's a lot of talk right now about leadership and transparency. And I think people now want and expect transparency in leadership. And part of that is because of, you know, how we expect our world leaders to behave, and the fact that everything is communicated on social media now. But yeah. being open and honest and transparent from a leadership position is very important. And I agree. I don't think you can have too much overarching communication, and you have to use different channels for sure. You don't send, I don't know, emails every day about it, but you know, we had a monthly newsletter, again, highlighting
that's a good idea.
Accomplishments of different parts of the organization in executing the change and calling people out. And then in all hands, we always made it a point to call out the successes as well. And when people had trouble, we made it clear that you have all these people as part of the core team that are there to help. So if you're struggling, if you have trouble, reach out. We're here to help. And that's, I think that's what people are looking for, is I'm going to be okay. I'm not going to get fired if I fall down a bit. You're going to help me get back up and move forward. And it's safety is very important in making changes.
I love it. You're like literally just listing off the things that we've got 40 things in our diagnostic, and you're like safety, psychological safety is another whole one we could do an entire episode on. It's so important. And they all, these are all related as well. Like knowing, you know, having leaders who are vulnerable and giving people permission to make mistakes. Like these are all that leads to psychological safety. All self-reinforcing. Like you do this stuff and makes the other things easier and easier. It almost feels like the way we're just talking about this is that the whole thing of change management and navigating change that a company has realized they have to go through is a case of saying, well, we don't really know what the exact right answer is. And we don't really know how to go about this and what the next, maybe that's it. We know what the next step is, but also, you know what? We trust you, i.e. the people in the company, right? We trust you to be able to take the next step and the next step and the next step. And that's so much trust is another one, right? That's so much of this, what this comes down to is leadership saying, hey, we think this is the right way to go. We've done our, you know, and back it up, you know, research, this is the thinking and all that. But we don't know the exact path to get there, and we trust you to help us get there together. Does that resonate? And also, have you seen that, like, done well?
It resonates. The trust thing is very important, because if you say something out loud and then your behavior doesn't back up what you said, your trust will be gone. That's what I meant when I said, you know, if you give people the safety to do their best to execute change and give them the safety to fail and be able to recover, then the next step would not be to put that person on a PIP if they tried and they failed. So you got to be careful. What do you say? You got to follow through on the other part though. I think I would change it a little bit, because I would not get up and say, you know, we're not really sure how to do this. I would give people the map. I would say, this is the map. We're very confident in this map. And we're, you know, so you're not asking people to figure out how to get from point A to point B on their own without any map. We're giving them the map. we are not going to micromanage them in getting from point A to point B. We are going to equip them, train them, be there for support if they have questions, and we're going to give them all those resources. But yeah, we trust that everybody at the company is going to believe and row the boat in this new direction, and we're all going to work together, and we're all going to thrive together. So we believe in empowering people to get where we expect them to go, for sure. But just saying, we trust you to figure it out, kind of, but I'd give them a map, because it's uncertain waters. So you want to help them get around the rocky points.
Yeah. I'm glad we kind of had that discussion, because that was on a spectrum. You definitely don't want to just be like, hey, this is the destination, figure it out. And the other end, you don't want to be, like you said, micromanaging the whole thing. And so I think it's helpful distinction that those are two ways to go. And there is a case of both. You can never, like, there is no amount of planning in the world will ever predict a perfect path, right? It's impossible. Like, the world just doesn't work like that. So there's always that. And so, yeah, but I feel like a lot of leadership actions almost suppose that there is a perfect path. You know, it's like, it's saying, like, I've got this figured out, and this is the way to do it. And so there's some happy medium here that's saying, yes, like, this is the chart, this is the path we've charted, this is the way, and this is why we believe it. So that there is a level of confidence, but also if things change, and if, you know, unexpected things happen, and actually unexpected things will happen, we trust you to know how to navigate them, right? That's probably a bit more nuanced.
Yeah. Or if you have a great idea that we didn't think of, bring it forward. We want to hear it.
Ooh, that. Openness to feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another great one. Another great one, which I think is in our 40. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, so it's interesting to me that, you know, we set out talking about, you come at this from the perspective of change management, and a lot of the things you have seen work in your experience is all around, it's the same stuff I've seen in what I call learning culture. And so these things are kind of, we're talking about the same thing, which is so interesting to me, that it's that whole process of, like, companies can learn to get better at this. I think that's the exciting thing, right? And then sort of no amount of change is insurmountable. Like, you could take on anything, which is quite exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And from a human perspective, you know, there's that phrase, how do you eat an elephant? It's really one bite at a time. I see the elephant picture behind you. I couldn't resist. Because I think from the human perspective, if you say to them, we're here and we're going to get to here, and it looks like some moonshot and it feels impossible, that's where I think people start to break down and get really afraid and saying, no, I can't do that. Breaking it down in ways where people can do a little bit every day. It's kind of that if you get 1% better every day, or even 1% per week, where are you going to be at the end of a year?
Yeah.
It's massive. But if you think about, 1% per week, that doesn't seem like much. It's that type of breakdown.
Yeah, definitely. And it's compound interest right there. And that's also, I mean, I think that's another takeaway for people that, you mentioned this at the beginning, you do break it down. There's sort of stages and milestones that you celebrate along the way. And you also have the vision of what it should look like in the end. So you've got both these things, but your day-to-day focus, you can't be looking at that vision thing all the time. You have to be handling what's in front of your face, right? You have to be like going through that and then have that almost process built in to step back and go, okay, where are we now? Like, okay, we're a few steps closer. We also went a little bit off track here, so we need to, you know, course correct there. And it's that back and forth of, like, focusing on the here and now, and then also casting back forward again.
Yeah. Yes, all that. I completely agree with what you just said. You're focusing on your day-to-day. Sometimes you're making progress and you're not realizing it by getting your day-to-day, assuming like your day-to-day is focused in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe one of the last few questions on this, if you could, I'm wondering if there's something that you've seen in the past, like something that just hasn't worked, or something that you think is enablement as a profession could do better. Like if you could like wave a magic wand and sort of fix one thing about this that that goes to, and I think this is a point on everyone's mind, is sort of reinforces the value of enablement as well, right? Like where enablement can really play a key role in all this stuff that we've talked about. What would that be? What would you want to see happen?
I think the notion of hardcore productivity metrics is still very controversial in enablement. And I think we do have to show how we contribute to overarching productivity in very real and numbers-based ways. I'm talking about this later this week at SEC Summit, but yeah. In order to make sure you're speaking the language of all the C-levels, the CFO, CEO, CRO, we have to find a way to tie what we do to very real results. Change management, same thing. Part of where are we now and where do we want to be? There has to be some numerical part of that. And enablement is not a singular function that can create that. There has to be a lot of the GTM org involved, sometimes mm-hmm. even orgs outside go to market. It has to be a holistic approach, but enablement is certainly a contributor. And I think a lot of the ways we contribute do turn into productivity. So let's measure productivity for real. Let's tie our enablement programs to those productivity metrics. So if you have a brand new product line, and you say, we have to grow sales in that new product line in order to ensure the company grows and thrives. Great. So what are we going to measure? Are we going to measure pipeline? Are we going to measure participation percentage in engaging in this product line? Are we going to measure conversion of pipeline to closed deals or average selling mm-hmm. price? You can choose whatever you want to measure and focus on, and then build programs and tools and training to bring people to grow skills that contribute to that productivity. Because there's always a skills component and a knowledge component, and then there's the behavioral aspect.
Yeah.
So I think that's my number one. And part of that, honestly, Andrew, is because I got taken out by a CFO after being in a job for 2 months. And there's backstory, like, the CRO was all on board. The CFO and the CEO made some decisions and a job went away, even though we were going to have massive impact, but I hadn't been there for all that long. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to speak CFO language now in order to protect our own selves. And I think we can as contributors, and we focus on where are we now, where do we want to be in numbers? And then we build mm-hmm. the programs and the reinforcement and a metric system to track how are we doing as a whole. And part of that is skill assessments. Like enablement can conduct skill assessments for real and say people that have these skills are doing better, building pipeline, closing big deals, whatever that metric is.
Yeah. Tying it to skill assessments or competencies, that's so key. I feel like we're touching on a potential like another topic to do an episode on, because this is, I know, near and dear to your heart. I think anybody who, this recording will come out after your SEC event, but hopefully people were able to check that out as well, because I think there's so much to discuss there, and I have to resist the urge, knowing that the time we have left to go down that path. So let me bring us back to the conversation here to wrap up, Cheryl, because I think you've offered a lot of great advice for people. And, you know, I've listed, and there's probably a dozen things here that, again, resonate with stuff that I talk about all the time as well. If you had to summarize this as kind of, you know, a takeaway for people, or even just to your younger self, if you think like your first role in enablement, you're starting out there, and if you could tell that Cheryl something that would be helpful in again helping humans navigate change, what would you tell her?
I think the revelation is almost every job I've had has had a big component of change management. I think no matter what job you do, a lot of the complex projects and programs and initiatives do revolve around human change. You always have to think about the people, even if it looks like an operational change, a systems change, a financial change. If you don't focus on how that impacts the people part of whatever change you're making, then the effect will be seriously diminished or non-existent. So I think human change is an aspect of everything that we do in enablement and beyond. I mean, my first career was in IT. And one of the things we did in my first roles at a very large company is I worked for the corporate team that changed our whole email system. That is a massive change for every person at the company. You're not going to use this. You're going to use this. It's an entirely different interface. And that was kind of my first taste of how do we help people through that change and make them excited about the change.
Yeah.
And so I feel like every job I've had has had a human change management piece, and thinking about how to get through to a person and get them through successfully and excitedly, that's a lot of what we do in enablement. And it's a lot of what everybody should be thinking about.
That's a beautifully summed up. I think anybody who is thinking about changing careers or getting into this, if that doesn't sound appealing, you should probably rethink this as a role, because it is, comes up with every single person I talk to. It's come up in every role you've had in your career. Cheryl, this has been fantastic. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day and sort of new role and all that to share some of these ideas with people. Anything you want to point people towards if they want to connect with you or anything like that?
Oh, I am all over LinkedIn, albeit now that I'm working full-time, I'm less on LinkedIn, but please feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. I love awesome. Connecting with new people and having conversations with other sales enablement people. I am a big believer in learning something new every day, every week. Keep learning or start dying is a phrase that a wise person once said to me. And I am always trying to improve my own self and gain more and more knowledge. I do really enjoy learning. So reach out, tell me what you think, and tell me some ways that you've been successful in change management, because I am nowhere close to perfect, let me tell you.
Well, that's you're leading by example with that last statement. So, Cheryl, thank you so much. We'll include all the links to connect with you in the show notes. And this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been great talking with you. I'm glad this succeeded and I had good wireless this time.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Hello, hello. I hope you enjoyed that episode. It's Andrew again with a quick message. If you'd like to support the show, the best way to do that is to leave us ratings and reviews where you listened. If you're on YouTube, hit the like and subscribe buttons and feel free to leave a comment. We love hearing from our listeners and viewers. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, please take the time to give us a rating and leave a review. Once again, we love hearing from our loyal listeners. If you're listening to this on Spotify, please hit the follow button to make sure that you don't miss new episodes as they come out. See you next week for another episode of the Learning Culture Podcast. Thank you for listening.